All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we are just you're just listening to A Change Is Going to Come by Kutcher Edwards. And now we're just going right into our second interview for the program today. And we have on the line Jackie Criss, who is a rank-and-file ANMF member and also a member of Socialist Alliance, and has also recently produced an article for Green Left on the whole kind of aged care kind of disaster that has been kind of happening in the midst of, you know, I guess the current state of the COVID-19 pandemic. So yeah, good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So I guess the kind of first question has been, I guess, following this kind of current sort of COVID sort of wave or outbreak or whatever way you want to kind of describe it, one of the most kind of disastrous consequences has been its impact on the aged care sector. And I guess this has been regularly kind of described as a crisis in the media. And in fact, this is not the first time that it seems to be obviously a recurring story. Like every time there's some kind of COVID wave or every time there's some COVID outbreak, there's always seems to be, you know, some issue related to disaster related to kind of aged care. And I guess, what can you tell us, Jackie, about, you know, tell us about the situation affecting aged care right now?
Okay. So anyone who has a loved one in aged care and or who's got anyone in aged care, because some young people are in aged care, knows that aged care is in a shambles at the moment. That's definitely in crisis, regardless of what Morrison and Colbeck want to have, however they want to paint it. First of all, I want to say, Jacob, I want to offer my deepest condolences to all those who've lost loved ones in aged care facilities, because it's often a disenfranchised grief. Because some of the people have been prevented from being with their loved ones in the last stages of their life, and there's been a lot of people in that category, and it's been really, really tragic. But to answer your question, residential aged care has overwhelmingly borne the brunt of COVID-19 being overrepresented in the death statistics. And there's some pretty alarming figures. So I've been sort of looking at it. These are a couple of days old, so they've obviously got worse. So we've got 1,500 deaths in aged care facilities over the pandemic time, 2 years. Now, 1,900 people have died in the past 6 weeks were in aged care. Sorry, that's the total in aged, sorry. 500 people of the 1,900 people that have died in the past 6 weeks were in aged care. Sorry about that. There's something leaving for work. And there's been 40,000 residents have not had their booster shots, so that's pretty damning of the government. I mean, why? Like, that's ridiculous. We've known for a long time that they've needed booster shots. There's also extended periods of lockdown, which is having a really detrimental effect on the residents. Some people are locked down for 10 days at a time. So this is leading to neglect. So there's staff going without hygiene. You've heard of people missing meals. I know of one person that's had, like, a lot of people are getting pressure areas because they're not being moved enough. And, of course, they're not being monitored, so there's falls, unwitnessed falls, wound breakdowns, there's urinary tract infections not being picked up. So there's a whole range of issues that are coming with this, medical issues that are complicating the lack of staff and the lack of care. And at any given time, we hear, like, there's multiple shifts, thousands of shifts over Australia not being filled. There's also a third of the deaths in Australia from COVID have happened in residential care. More than half of the facilities at the moment in New South Wales are battling with outbreaks. And just recently, we've heard Jetted Gardens in Queensland, that has had an outbreak. So that is similar to St Basil's, actually, because their numbers are increasing. So St Basil's had 45 deaths in Victoria, and that was really shocking. But Jetta Garden facility is actually heading the same direction. They've had 15 deaths recently, and they've had a lot of staff contracting the disease, the virus. 82 staff have contracted it, 100 residents have been infected, and the Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission, which is the organisation that goes around and monitors aged care, they're wanting to evacuate, but the Department of Health has stopped that. So, yeah, so that's sort of the state of play at the moment. It's pretty bad.
Hi, Jackie. Leah here as well. Just touching on the Department of Health response, federally, I guess, but on a state level too, what's your analysis, and do you have any comments on the government's response to this crisis, including the $800 payment that's being offered to aged care workers?
Well, look, I think they have a lot of thought bubbles, the government, but it's obviously a desperate attempt to win back staff. But it's a very short-term measure, so there's no planning or real commitment. It's not enticing people back to the sector because there's sort of nobody left to come back. So everyone that I've spoken to thinks it's a pathetic response, as is calling in the army to help. Like, oh my God, why didn't they think about things before? So obviously they're not long-term solutions. It's a bit ironic because they kind of, every time something goes wrong, and it doesn't matter if it's in aged care or whatever, they call the army in. So if you want to fight the virus, call the army. So I think the army actually are very stretched at the moment anyway. And, you know, they're public servants going in to fix, again, a private institution. So whenever something goes right, they call in the public institutions to fix private things. No, but the army's also still doing stuff with COVID, like they're doing PPE deliveries, they're picking up rubbish, I believe, they're COVID testing in isolated areas. So I don't even know if they've got the capacity to sort this out anyway. But in answer to your response, this is just a laughable solution. It's just not working. They need a wage. People need a decent wage rise. $800 is just a slap in the face, really.
And I guess the kind of issues affecting aged care go, I guess, way beyond the COVID, the impacts of the current COVID-19 pandemic. And I guess they have a historical kind of legacy. In fact, you could actually almost say that what the COVID-19 pandemic has actually done is it's actually exacerbated the problems that were actually already present in the aged care sector. And I guess, what can you tell us about how the issues of privatisation and neoliberalism have impacted on the aged care sector?
Well, I think that's really the heart of the issue. So, because I've been a nurse for 40 years, I've seen things come and I can actually track the changes. And you may be shocked that I've been nursing that long. So when I was a young nurse, nurses enrolled nurses, and I've been thinking about this lately because it's quite interesting. So back when I was a young nurse, there were only nurses, registered nurses and enrolled nurses were the predominant workers in aged care, and there were very few unskilled staff. The nursing homes were called nursing homes because there were nurses working in them. And then around about, I think it was 1997, the Aged Care Act was introduced, and this removed mandatory staffing levels and it opened the door for privatisation of nursing homes, because most of them were kind of like not-for-profit or publicly owned nursing homes then. And this opened the door to privatisation and fostered also the reliance on unqualified or very limited qualifications and a casualised workforce, which was underpaid. And over the years, the pay has got worse and worse. So after a while, the word nursing was removed and nursing homes were named aged care facilities. And now you're hard-pressed to find a nurse or even an enrolled nurse in a nursing home sometimes. So the privatisation of the sector has meant the aged care has become a lucrative business. So these providers are big companies. They're sometimes listed on the share market. It's a big global market, often known both overseas interests. And they operate on a purely profit-driven model. Of course, they all have their mission statements. They all say they care and they value everyone. But, like, so do, you know, gun clubs have mission statements. So the proof, you know, the proof is in the figures. So, and that, back in 2018, I know the ANMF, which is the nurses' union that I'm in, commissioned the Tax Justice Network to investigate the private aid sector. And they found that in 2017, the six largest for-profit companies were given more than $2.17 billion in government subsidies. So these private providers, that actually gave them 72% of their total revenue. And then in 2016-2017, these very same companies reported profits of $210 million. So I'm not very good at maths, but it begs the question, how can these companies, nursing aged care facilities, they're big businesses and they cannibalise the public system, they cannibalise the public purse for their own profit. So these companies do use sophisticated accounting methods to avoid tax. So they pay limited tax. I hark back to, when was it, 2018, pre-COVID, when I call it the food gate scandal broke out, revealing that the common practice of spending less than 6.8 cents per day on food, if you recall. So that's sort of what we're dealing with. This is a historical perspective that's been going on for a long time. So there was no way that these aged care facilities, privatised, profit-driven, could have handled a pandemic. There's no way. They were just scraping. They weren't even scraping through beforehand. It's a very profit-driven. That's what it is.
Mm. And, Jackie, you've touched on some of the systemic problems there with aged care, particularly around privatisation. To, I guess, sort of flip it, what are some of the measures that need to be implemented in order to address these problems?
Well, the ANMS, they've got, since 2001, they've had various aged care campaigns, because I've been through about six of them, and they've tried to address similar issues, but they've got a campaign going at the moment called the Four Key Actions to Fix Aged Care, and that is, so they want a registered nurse on site at all times, greater transparency, funding tied to care, so they want to know where the money's going, not in the pockets, hip pockets of these big business, big conglomerations. Minimum mandated care hours, so that the patients actually get, or the residents get proper care, and better wages and conditions. So I would support all of that, but the Health Services Union have also put in a wage rise for aged care workers, the 25%, but that's sitting with the Fair Work still. That's been sitting there since 2020, and I think the Fair Work have just got, you know, they've got cuts too. I don't think they can process anything, because the nurses we've got our EBA sitting there for, you know, EBA has been sitting at the Fair Work waiting to be ratified, and that hasn't happened yet either, so I don't know when that's going to happen, but we would certainly support like a massive, and they need a massive uplift with wages for the aged care sector. But none of them actually say privatise, you know, in privatisation. And I'm a member of Socialist Alliance. So we are actually campaigning for an end to the privatisation of the aged care. I think they've had a good go. They've been, you know, they've shown their true colours. They haven't been able to handle the pandemic. They were not, they've been rotting the system for years, and I think it's time to stop. It's time for us to take private aged care back into public hands. We certainly need greater transparency where the funding is going, and make sure this funding, because aged care have had a lot of funding and they've had a lot of money, so people say they're underfunded, but I do wonder where the money is going, because that's sort of where you want to know where the money's going, and is it really underfunded? It probably is, but still, we don't know where that money's going. It's certainly not going where it should be. And we want to ensure that public funds and these people are made accountable, and we want to stop the rorting. Also, we want immediate wage rise, which I said, to these workers and the nurses, because there's a disparity with the aged care nurses and the public sector, which that often happens. We want an end to casualisation of the workforce, the aged care workforce as well.
All right.
That's it.
Well, that's just, I guess, right on time in terms of wanting to kind of conclude the kind of interview. Do you, guess, have any kind of brief final comments you'd like to make before we finish up this interview?
I think we often forget about migrant workers in the sector, so I just want to say that private aged care providers also engage in exploitative practices with using low-wage and casual migrant workers. They're hired to maximise profit margins. So I think what we need to do is ensure that migrant workers are looked after, they're employed, you know, on a permanent basis, and they're given full industrial residency and citizenship. And we need to look after them as well. But we also, I think what we need to do is just respect our elderly. The other thing, because if our society actually looks at, we don't look after our elderly at the moment, it doesn't show, it's the key indicator of a healthy society if we do treat our elderly and we're careful. So clearly we're not doing that at the moment. And if we're leaving it up to the market forces, it's been a dismal failure. So we do need to take back private aged care and put it into public hands. So that's my last comment. Thanks.
And a good way to conclude. Thank you very much, Jackie. And thank you very much for being on our program. And yeah, we wish you all the best in terms of your struggle, especially as an active ANMF delegate and member.
Oh, thank you, Jackie.